It's time for Transfer Tittle Tattle, the review. And Liam Williams from the Mirror Online joins me. Liam, thanks for joining us. Where do we start?
Well, the transfer request of John Walters, I was thinking, I couldn't believe when that came in.
I know, there's been some fantastic free transfers. I think we should really start by looking at the loan market as well. Yeah. Who am I kidding?
Yeah.
It's all about De Gea.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything quite like it in my life. Liam, I know you're bursting to talk about this. Yeah, usually when I sort of get in touch with you for the show, it's, oh, Liam, could you come on? Yeah, that's fine, no problem. This time, I imagine you've been waiting outside 5 minutes early, even if I hadn't have contacted you.
Yeah, I was, yeah.
So let's hear, just in case you've been living in a cave for a couple of days, how the story unfolded on Sky Sports News. Lord, I can't change. Won't you
buy Freebird, yeah. It is a huge deal and it is done. We are just hearing from my Spanish colleague Guillem Balaguer that David De Gea, the deal to take him to Real Madrid from Manchester United, the deal is done. As I understand it, it is a 40 million euro deal. It is 29 million pounds. And Keylor Navas, the Costa Rican goalkeeper who plays for Real Madrid, was involved centrally in this deal, which was a complex deal. We understand in the last few moments that Navas accepts his part in the deal. So we understand that that means that Navas will be coming the other way to Manchester.
Paperwork was not submitted in time to beat the 11 o'clock Spanish deadline. A deal had been agreed between the clubs that would see De Gea join Madrid for £18 million. As part of the package, Costa Rica keeper Keylor Navas was due to move the other way to Old Trafford in a deal valued at £11 million. But shortly after the window closed, we learned that the formalities had not been completed in time. United had told us the fault is not with them, and that they have proof all their paperwork was submitted in time for the deal to go through.
Basically, Real Madrid, even though they may have had confirmed by FIFA that yes, they did beat the deadline when they sent the IMST information, actually, they're not going to appeal to the league. That's it. The case is over. David De Gea will stay at Manchester United and Keylor Navas will be the goalkeeper of Real Madrid. They're not going to go any further because they realised that by appealing to the league, there was no chance they were going to get what they wanted, which is the deal to go through. There's no precedent for it. La Liga has been very strong from the beginning. We were saying earlier, from the beginning they said, the documents arrive at 28 minutes past midnight, which means we're not going to allow it to go through. So Real Madrid have decided not to appeal, which means the case is closed.
So there you go. That's how it unfolded on Sky Sports News on that night. And I have to admit, it was a bit like watching history in a weird way. Because I was going to go to bed. Literally, yeah. Just came up on Sky Sports News. Twitter went into meltdown. Liam, let's just get your opinion on this to start.
I find it funny, to be honest. I do find it funny that two of the biggest clubs in world football could play out such an incredible farce as this whole thing. And as it unfolded, it just sort of became more and more comical.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, you know, you've not sent a document over in time, that sort of thing happens. And then it turns out you did send it over in time, but it was in the wrong format that you couldn't open. And it was just, you're starting to think, you could imagine Ed Woodward in his office sending it over in Wingdings and Real Madrid getting it and just thinking, what is this? What does any of this mean?
But it was just the strange way in which it came about. Because obviously, everyone had sort of seen it about 8 o'clock the night before of De Gea was going to be moving. The deal, he said it was done.
Yeah, yeah.
But in quotation marks, it was agreed.
Yeah.
It's just the paperwork wasn't done. So it strikes me as a strange set of events for this to come across of, like you say, the two biggest clubs in the world. Now, they both released statements. Both of them essentially blaming the other side.
It's all got a bit X Factor, hasn't it?
It has.
Who cares about football? It's all about statements these days.
Yeah. And I love the fact that Real Madrid did it in their 10-point plan, so to speak. They're saying they did everything they could. Manchester United doing it in more than 10. I don't think they could put it down to 10. But it was in bullet points. Maybe that's what stopped it in the first place. They were sending it over in bullet points to each other. But look, when the, let's just go from the very start. When De Gea was going and Navas was coming the other way, did you think that was a good deal for Man United?
No, I didn't at all, no. I think Navas is probably an upgrade on Sergio Romero. Mm. But it felt like Man United had backed down a little bit, just a little bit. You know, Real Madrid said that the deal in total was valued at about £29 million. That's including the player. And Man United said all along they'd hold out for £30
million. Yeah.
But I just, I've got to say, I'm not the biggest fan of Real Madrid, and I've loved the way that it's come back to bite them because they've had all summer to do this. They had all summer to do it. And it was suggested at the start of the summer that they'd leave it as late as possible, like they did with Gareth Bale, to say to the fans, look, we've managed to win this really long-running saga. It was a hard battle, but we've won it. And I think they've just pushed it too far this time, and they've missed out on him.
I saw a comment on Twitter saying that the relationship between Real Madrid and Manchester United was broken. But from an English Premier League and a Manchester United perspective in there, surely that's not the worst thing in the world for Manchester United, because the amount of players that are going over to Real Madrid have been the likes of, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo and Ruud van Nistelrooy, some of the greatest Manchester United players they've ever had. Coming the other way, you've had players that either aren't that bothered and are looking for a bit of a payout. And so is it on Real Madrid's side now to really try and do this? Because it was probably Manchester United, they're in a bad mood and had a bad taste and a hangover from the Ramos saga that was over the summer.
Well, I think when you go back to about 2008 or 9, when Sir Alex Ferguson said that he wouldn't sell Real Madrid a virus and later then sold them the best player in world football, it's a bit of a climb down.
Yeah.
So I don't think the relationship's been that great for a long time, but ultimately business is business. You put it to one side and you get on with it. But I think that Manchester United, despite the fact that I think they've played the De Gea thing pretty well, have come out of the whole transfer window with very little credit for all of the... I mean, it just like the targets seem to get more and more unrealistic. You've got sort of Gareth Bale and then Sergio Ramos and Thomas Muller and then Neymar, and you just think, well, the only player left is now Lionel Messi, who you've not targeted.
Yeah.
And I saw in the Telegraph today, it was well put, that Manchester United are essentially throwing stones at the windows of Real Madrid and Barcelona, and they're both just drawing the curtains, mumbling to themselves about the noisy neighbour who won't get the message. You know, and it's like, please listen to us, please. But it's like, we've told you they're not for sale and they're not getting the message. And I don't think it looks good on Man United.
No, it doesn't. And I don't think it helps that a lot of people, and I saw this happen on Twitter, are bringing out the Ed Woodward quote where he says Manchester United can do things in the transfer window only other clubs can dream of.
Yeah, I don't know what that is then. I don't think many clubs dream of signing 19-year-olds for £36 million, but maybe that's what he was referring to.
We'll get on to Anthony Martial very shortly, but just to sort of wrap up De Gea a little bit, because he's still a Manchester United player. Obviously, he's joined up with the Spain squad for the qualifiers. Mm-hmm. But what happens to him now? What happens to Manchester United? I mean, I know there's a lot of ifs and buts here, but is he going to end up playing? Is he just going to sit on the bench for this long? I mean, is Euros just around the corner?
He gets into that squad immediately. He gets the number one jersey back absolutely instantly. If you watch the Swansea game at the weekend...
Yeah.
Sergio Romero's never inspired much confidence. You know, he's not done much wrong, but he hasn't inspired much confidence. And then you really saw it come to a head against Swansea. It's in the best interest of both parties to play him. You know, De Gea, he has got, you know, a matter of months until the European Championships. And Vicente Del Bosque said if he doesn't play for Man United, it will make him difficult for him to be, you know, in the Spain team. And let's be honest, he's a professional footballer. He's not just going to pick the ball up and throw it in the back of his own net, you know.
Oh, William Gallas said that about 10 years ago.
Well, it's just, you know, you're a professional about it and you'll do your job. Maybe he won't be as good as he was last season, but he's still a considerable upgrade on the goalkeepers that are at the club. So all in all, I don't think it's worked out too badly for Man United on the De Gea transfer.
Looking at Real Madrid, it's strange to see that actually Barcelona have probably done the most transfer business under the fact that they're on a transfer ban. Yeah. But also, there's no Galactico this season. There's no massive signing. There's no Bale. There's no Ronaldo. And De Gea would have been that. The Real Madrid fans are going to be feeling fantastic about this now.
They're a strange bunch because they do expect, like, you know, the massive marquee signing every season, and De Gea would have been that, and that's why I just can't understand why they let it go so late.
Yeah,
even give yourself 2 or 3 days, you know, just a little bit of breathing room, not a matter of hours.
Yeah,
really, because they didn't bid all summer.
No,
they didn't make one bid all summer, and then it got to the final day. I mean, you know yourself from when you've done, you know, work, whether it be at uni or in your job, and you've pushed the deadline so far and you thought, I don't know why I've done this.
Yeah.
Why didn't I just do it earlier? And that's what they must be asking themselves. Why didn't we just wrap this up when we could have done?
Yeah. No, I totally agree. However, one thing I have learned is that actually on the Real Madrid side with Navas, he's going to be going back into the dressing room. Yeah. Maybe it's going to be a little bit frosty to start with. Yeah. But his stock is very high above the Madrid fans, because there were quite a lot of them saying, no, we don't want to lose this kid. We really like him.
Well, some have suggested that, I think there was a poll on the Marca website, which is like the Real Madrid paper, that said that they didn't want to lose Navas. They wanted De Gea, but they didn't want to lose Navas. Mm. And I don't think Man United would have sold De Gea if they weren't getting Navas the other way. And the fact that Real Madrid didn't, they didn't pull all the stops out for this.
No.
They made massive changes to the like the agreement between the clubs at the last minute, which United weren't going to accept, you know, so willingly. Then they submitted documents late and everything else that went on. I think if they were desperate to sign him, they would have done.
Mm.
You know, and to me, I got the impression they weren't actually that desperate to sign him. Maybe they did listen to the fans a little bit and thought, maybe it'd be best if we just get him next year on a free. Maybe that's where they've gone down.
I mean, looking at for David De Gea now, I do feel for him out the most out of this, because obviously he was saying that Real Madrid is his sort of his dream club, and he to be fair, he was very, very respectful to Manchester United throughout this. There's a lot of players, as we've seen, if you compare that to Sterling, who, you know, I think did the right thing, but that's another topic altogether. He was very respectful to Manchester United during all this, and he's actually come out probably as a losing party out of all this now.
Yeah, he has a little bit, but I think what will happen ultimately is he's a very young goalkeeper. Mm. You know, what will happen is he'll probably get another 12 months at one of the biggest clubs in the world, in the Champions League, and then after that, we'll probably get a free transfer back to his home club, you know. So I don't think he's... Apparently he was said to be distraught over it when he heard the news, and it had been like having a cold bucket of water thrown on him, which you can imagine, because everyone expected it to happen. Everybody just knew. If you didn't expect it, you knew it was going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
And then just out of nowhere, actually, no, deals off. And I can't imagine how he's feeling at the moment, but he'll get over it, he'll be professional, and the chances are in 12 months he will be a Real Madrid player.
And I really thought on transfer deadline day there wasn't going to be a transfer that would top that. I thought, that's pretty much done now, and then we saw like the likes of Lescott going, and it was like, that's all right, isn't it? but to be fair, there were some big transfers. We'll go on to that... very, very shortly. But first, we've got an interview that was actually the bigger picture last night. One of our Spanish contacts, Rick Sharma. He's done quite a lot in the Spanish press, and we spoke to him last night here on Radio Yorkshire.
I mean, Madrid's statement is very interesting. It's quite rare for a club to be so detailed in how a transfer that didn't happen. And it's not entirely clear whether we can trust Madrid's statement at face value. Because, I mean, they didn't ever get the deal. They simply have paid what Manchester United wanted weeks ago and got De Gea earlier in the summer instead of leaving it to the last day. It's also some parts of the statement which are a bit confusing in that they say that they put the transfer through at 26 minutes past midnight, which really... shouldn't be able to be done because of the way the system works. And they're basically putting all the blame on Manchester United for the failed transfer.
Is there an argument here that if they really wanted David De Gea, that they could have had him months ago?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's fair enough that they didn't want to pay the money that Manchester United wanted, which is about £35 million. So he got to 1 year left on his contract when they can get him for free next summer. But... now they're going to have to, according to information in El País, they're going to have to pay De Gea himself €15 million as part of a deal they made with him about signing him before the end of this transfer window.
Hi, Ricky Stanley here. How are you doing?
Hi, very well, thanks.
I just wanted to ask the big differences between Spanish regulations and English regulations when it comes to the actual deadline itself, because we know that the Premier League can be a lot more lenient in the senses of paperwork and so on. But what is the major differences, especially with the Spanish regulations with transfers?
Well, with international transfers, it's actually quite similar because both teams have to put the deal through on the FIFA transfer management system. And that was where the problem lay this time, because Manchester United didn't do it until the last moment. according to Madrid, and then they said they tried to send the documentation to the LFP to register the player, and it had already passed the deadline, which was midnight last night in Spain. And there's never been a precedent in Spain for any transfer that's been late to be allowed through after the midnight deadline. So Madrid made noises about appealing yesterday, but today they seem to have thought better of it. It's never been done before.
And looking at Real Madrid, they haven't really signed a Galactico this season. De Gea would have been that. How do you think Real Madrid's fans will feel after this transfer window?
Not particularly impressed, really, with the club. I mean, it started off with the terrible treatment of Iker Casillas, who they sold or let go to Porto after a lot of haggling over the rest of his contract money. And then, I mean, they ruled out moves to Pogba earlier in the window. Again, quite rare for a club to categorically deny they were going to move for a star player like Pogba. And then, I mean, they've made some decent signings. Kovacevic from Croatia is a very hot prospect. He's been compared to Andres Iniesta in the past. Obviously, he's got a long way to go to match up to that. And he's not really a player that Madrid needs right now, because they've got a lot of attacking midfielders like Isco, James, and they've been playing Gareth Bale in that position lately. And they've found a young player called Jesus Vallejo, who's a very good young centre-back, and he's gone out on loan straight away. They've made some good deals, but there's nothing that seems to be improving the squad as it is at the moment, which is really what they need to do if they are to challenge Barcelona, who obviously won the treble last season. Danilo, the right-back they signed, they already have a good right-back in Dani Carvajal, so it doesn't really improve the squad that much. And Casemiro is another player they got from Porto after loaning him to Porto, and they essentially had to pay €7.5 million to find their own player back.
It's funny how it works sometimes, isn't it? Just finally, Rick, obviously a lot of finger-pointing with the David De Gea move. If you could blame one party more than the other for this collapsing, who would you lay the blame at?
Very difficult question. I think they've both got what they deserve, which is everyone being a bit frustrated in the end. Maybe Madrid, simply because they've clearly got the money to pay for De Gea, and if they really, really, really wanted him, they should have done that.
Transfer Tittle Tattle on Radio Yorkshire.
Liam Williams from the Mirror Online joins me still. And now it's time to talk about Anthony Martial. £36 million for the Monaco centre-forward, 19 years of age, which has probably been the main focus about that, is the transfer fee and actually how old he is. I've spoken to Andrew Gibney, if you really listen to the show, who's our French football correspondent, quite a few times on him, because I am actually quite a big fan. I'm looking forward to seeing him in the Premier League. And Liam, I'll get your thoughts in a second, but first let's hear what Thierry Henry thinks of him, because a lot of people are dubbing this kid as the new Henry. So let's hear what he has to say on Anthony Martial.
This one has sent shockwaves right through European football. He has been likened, well, to Thierry Henry. He is a young Thierry Henry. Thierry Henry sitting yards from me. What do you think? What do you know about this kid?
Listen, it's kind of a weird one for me, because he's from the West Indies, obviously being French, but he's from the West Indies. We're from the same town too, Les Ulis. So it's I know of him, and I know I heard about him before, way before he went to I think Lyon, and then he went to Monaco, and now obviously he's at United. He has pace. Can he score a lot of goals? I actually don't know, because he only played 52 games. So it's a weird one for me to say, but it is a massive gamble that you need to take nowadays because of the situation that Man United has. But he has pace. We saw him at the Emirates last season playing with Monaco and causing trouble to the Arsenal defence. And he has a bright future. But there is always a question mark, where is he going to perform? We saw, for example, last year with Di Maria, an established and experienced player that couldn't make it.
That's Thierry Henry talking to Sky Sports News about Manchester United's new signing, Anthony Martial. £36 million, Liam. He's finally, Manchester United have got a big name, but it's a big amount of money.
Yeah, I'm not sure they have got a big name, to be honest. They've just spent a load of money. There's a difference, you know.
Well.
And don't get me wrong, if he goes on to be one of the best players in the world, which he may do, you know, you're not going to rule that out at this stage. If he does, then you'll say, you know, all in all, good fee, good value. But at the moment, it is a huge fee on what is essentially a punt.
Well, you say that, but at the same time, he's made a lot of waves in France. He's played some Champions League football. He's been used to that. He's been also sort of linked up with Dimitar Berbatov. You know, look, at the end of the day, this isn't... I know that it's a lot of money, and like you say, that if he becomes the next great player in the world, no one will remember the transfer fee. Raheem Sterling is exactly the same, and if he has a freak injury, you know, we wouldn't, you know, these things can happen. But at the end of the day, if you're going to spend on a very young talent, very close to the end of the window, you're going to end up paying over the odds anyway, aren't you?
Well, I think they put the fee up by about £15 million because they realised how desperate United were for another forward.
Yeah,
they saw how bad Rooney's been this season and thought we could probably fleece them here, and they have done. There was talk they'd be going to Tottenham for about, I don't know, about £16 million.
Yeah,
and then,
yeah,
then he signed a new contract, you know, so that the fee goes up, and then they see that United are desperate, and it might not have been a panic buy, but that's really how it comes across, you know, spending so much money on a teenager who has only actually played up front since about March last year.
But Manchester United do have a habit of spending a lot of money on young players and end up prospering.
Yeah.
You know, that's with Wayne Rooney and seeing how Luke Shaw does. I mean, he was £27 million back then as well.
Yeah, but I think the difference with those is they've signed players who they know will come in immediately and be able to perform. Rooney got a hat-trick on his debut. Shaw struggled with injuries last season, but he was good enough to be, you know, in the first team all the time. Martial, you think, well, who's he going to displace in the team? He's not going to take Mata or Depay out, you wouldn't have thought.
No.
He's not going to take Rooney out, so you're having to drop somebody then to sort of shoehorn him around. And to be honest, when I watched the game against Swansea at the weekend, I didn't think there was that much wrong with the personnel.
No.
But Rooney was woeful, really bad.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I looked at the team and I thought, this team would win a lot of games. You know, it's good enough to win games. The style of football, on the other hand, was dreadful.
Yeah.
They couldn't break the team down. Having a really fast player would be really good, like on the counter-attack. You know, the goal that Monaco scored against Arsenal, Berbatov, later on, that was made by Martial's run. And he squared it, Berbatov scored. But Manchester United don't play that way anymore.
No.
It's just passing for the sake of passing, you know. And I don't see a big problem with personnel. Maybe there's a lack of strength in depth at the moment, but I think that the real issue at the moment is how they're actually playing.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, I know that I'm very excited to see Anthony Martial in the Premier League, so I'm going to make a lot of excuses. But the one thing I can't seem to get around, one thing that doesn't seem to be picked up on too much, is the transfer of Javier Hernandez to Bayer Leverkusen. He's a fast, he's a pacey forward, and he seems to have a lot of a similar characteristics to Anthony Martial. And at the same time, you're just bringing in another player. I mean, why didn't they just keep Javier Hernandez? Because he was quite popular with the fans as well.
Yeah, but the problem with him is he was almost useless outside of the area. You know, if you needed a goal late on, and he did score so many late goals for them.
Yeah, exactly.
Which was really useful, but I just think he got a little bit tired with being on the bench. Mm. And when you've seen him start games over 90 minutes, it doesn't suit him. He suits coming on as an impact sub, and as a plan B. But you saw against Swansea, they brought Marouane Fellaini on. That was the plan B.
Yeah.
And when they played Bruges, he missed the penalty. And then he missed a chance as well. And you saw that the look Van Gaal and Giggs gave each other on the bench, they just thought, his time's up. And that's what that look seemed to suggest to me.
But it seems quite unbelievable because he had the famous game against MK Dons, the 4-0 loss.
Yeah.
Hernandez was up there as one of the players that was involved in the team.
Yeah.
He ended up getting loaned out to Real Madrid. He comes back, he gets one chance against Club Bruges. He has a bad game and suddenly, that's it. You're off, son. You're off to Bayer Leverkusen. Fergie rated the kid. He must have rated the kid to have him there for that long.
Yeah, but I don't think it's quite as simple as just the one game against Club Bruges. I think they must see things in training and think it's just not going to work. And again, I think I'd have probably kept him around if he was happy to sit on the bench, but I don't know if he was. He said something about needing to feel loved or something.
Yeah.
He'll probably go to Leverkusen and start a lot of games and, you know, maybe that'll suit him. But ultimately, if it wasn't going to work out for him at Man United and he wanted to leave, he had to go. The strange thing is that they'd let him go without having anybody lined up to replace him.
Yeah,
it was so strange because, you know, it seemed like they were going to loan out James Wilson and then they got rid of Hernandez, sold him permanently. Rooney might as well not be playing.
Yeah.
Manchester United it was looking like they were going to have as many strikers as official noodle partners. I don't think that's a good state for any football club to be in. to be honest. You know,
that's the best quote we'll ever have on this show.
And then all of a sudden, you just start throwing silly money at teenagers because you realise you've made a huge mistake.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. This is the one thing about Manchester United's attack before we move on. Januzaj's loan move to Borussia Dortmund. It seemed strange as well that he was going to be going when you have a lack of attacking options there as well. It's just, I mean, obviously, he needs first team football. We know that he is talented. We've seen that in the past, especially under the famous Moyes era. But under Louis van Gaal, he doesn't seem to have had the same break, really.
No, and I think at the start of pre-season, the lack of attacking options was mentioned, or it was put to Van Gaal, and he said, well, we have Wayne Rooney, and we also have Hernandez, and then we've got Januzaj and Depay who can play there, you know, if we need them to. All of a sudden, you've got rid of Hernandez, you've loaned Januzaj out. To me, the organisation in that club looks to be an absolute mess.
Yeah.
How on earth you can look to start a season with so few actual strikers and hope to challenge for the title?
Yeah.
And in my opinion, they don't hope to challenge for the title.
No.
I don't believe that. I think they are essentially, for now anyway, they are in the same category as Arsenal as just hoping you get in the Champions League, which I think is ridiculous for a club of the size that they are. But that's the way I see it. They've shown no ambition, realistic ambition, to turn that squad into title contenders. And if they really did want to do that, then there is gross incompetence at the club to not end up with anybody and then end up having to throw 36 million at a teenager.
No, I totally agree with you there. I think that Manchester United won't be challenging for the title this season. Another team, I don't think it'll be challenging for the title this season. And all I said to him was, I didn't say to them, you know, I don't think Arsene Wenger's listening to this show or for my wisdom. But I think he should have done, because at the end of the day, they needed someone up front.
Yep,
and we've said this time and time again. And I think I said to you about, it must have been 2 months ago, I think it was the first time we did the show, I said, Arsenal might challenge for the title if they get a Benzema, if they get a Cavani, if they get anyone up front that can score them goals. They've got one player in this transfer window, and they are the only club in the top five leagues that haven't signed out for a player. That's including Barcelona. They've got a transfer ban.
Amazing,
that's absolutely unbelievable.
It's impressive. Yeah.
I mean, this is the thing with Arsenal, okay? You could understand that they weren't going to challenge, they weren't going to buy things in when the stadium was being built. They didn't have the money. Now he's sitting on money, they've bought in Petr Cech and that's it. Surely, This must be a real kick in the teeth for Arsenal fans now.
You look at how bad Man United's transfer window seems to have gone. Arsenal's has been much worse. Yeah. Much, much worse. Thierry Henry said to Gary Neville a couple of weeks ago, you know, we are judging Arsenal as title contenders. It's like, okay, well, you've done an absolutely terrible job.
Yeah.
If you really believe you're title contenders or want to be, you've done an absolutely wretched job of this transfer window. They came out and said they have £200 million in the bank.
Yeah.
I said to you, they're not going to spend 200 million. No one expected them to spend 200 million. But sign someone. Sign somebody.
Anyone.
A goalkeeper's not going to turn you from a third or fourth place team into title challengers, let alone title winners. Yeah. You know, it's glaringly obvious what the side are missing. And targets were out there. You know, if Benzema was unrealistic, fine. Cavani wasn't. But they said they didn't want to pay 50 million for a 28-year-old. And you could sort of understand why they wouldn't want to do that. If they didn't want to win the title. If you want to win the title, you've got to spend that money.
Yeah.
Manchester City spent 49 million on a youngster who's essentially had two full seasons in the league. You know, they spent over 30 million on another centre back to add to the 42 million they spent the season before on a centre back. You've got, 58 million on De Bruyne? You've got to
million.
Spend the money.
Yeah.
Chelsea haven't spent much money this summer. They aren't defending the title, I'm afraid.
Arsenal.
No, Chelsea.
Chelsea.
They haven't spent any money, they're not defending the title. Man City spent the money, they'll win the title. It's as simple as that. Spend the money, win the league. Arsenal, no desire to do so.
I'll give you that. I do think there is... I don't know what it is. I don't know who has this lack of ambition, but there is surely something there. So I am going to go on to pick up any point there with about Chelsea, and we will talk about this very soon, but we're going to go to a bit more music in a second. At the end of the day, with Chelsea, you're right. They didn't get the stones. They didn't get the stones bin. This is something I'm going to talk about, the transfers that didn't happen. They didn't get stones. They didn't really bolster the defence, which is really what they needed. How much are they going to struggle now? I don't think they're going to struggle as much as Arsenal and Manchester United, But I don't think they'll be on. I don't think they'll be able to challenge on the European stage with that squad.
Well, I think it comes back to the point I've just made. We're judging Manchester United and Arsenal now, for me at the moment, as different clubs. They're in their own little category of teams that want to get in the Champions League.
Yeah.
Man City and Chelsea are two teams who want to win the league, you know, and challenge for the Champions League. Chelsea will be able to do neither. Man City could win this title by a record points tally. The only challengers going into the season were Chelsea.
Mm.
Well, Chelsea and Man City were the only challengers. I think if they'd have got Stones, they could have looked at the window and said, yeah, we've bolstered the defence.
Yeah.
The attack should still be good enough, but they haven't. And the targets have gradually got worse in calibre and have signed a defender from Reading who has now had a dozen loan spells at the age of about 23 or 24, and somebody else who Sunderland were targeting earlier in the transfer window and then ended up not signing.
Mm.
I think it's been really poor for Chelsea, to be honest. Yeah. I didn't think they needed to make that many signings.
No,
they were the champions, but I think when you see the start of the season that they've made, you feel like a bit of new blood could help, you know, just freshen things up a little bit. You know, when Man United won the title in years gone by, they'd always bring someone else in to just keep it fresh and they could defend the title. Since that era, no one's defended a title.
Transfer Tittle Tattle on Radio Yorkshire.
Yeah, listening to Transfer Tittle Tattle with me, Danny Parkinson and Liam Williams. We're doing a review of the entire transfer window and we're trying to get through it. We're expressing opinions and analysis as we usually do, but we find it hard to, because it's everything. It's like 3 months of everything.
Yeah, an hour has been quite tricky.
But I just want to pick up on a couple of transfers that didn't happen, because this is where, for me, away from De Gea and Martial and talking about some of the big teams that probably aren't going to challenge now, you're looking at the transfers that didn't happen because they're probably the bigger story than the likes of Julian Lescott going to Everton and so on and so forth. So let's start off with Berahino, because he handed that transfer request in, then sent that tweet out saying that he'd never work under his chairman again.
Terrible decision.
I don't know who advised him on that, Liam. Because you don't do that when there's not a lot of time left.
If anybody did advise him on that, they're probably not a very good advisor.
Yes.
I'd get a new advisor. That was really, really
bad. That was
bad.
It was bad.
Some players come out with like slightly cryptic tweets saying, you know, I wish I could have let the fans know how
I
feel.
Well, that's it. Like James Warren at Huddersfield came out with, the truth always comes out in the end.
Yeah.
Very cryptic.
Yeah, you know, but you know what he's getting
at.
He just comes out and says, I'm never playing for this chairman again. And you think, well, yes, you are.
Yeah.
You are a professional footballer. You are under contract to play football. The PFA will be brought in. If he refuses to play, West Brom just won't pay him any money. He'll get sued, probably, for, you know, some loss on West Brom's part. But the PFA will come in and he will play for West Brom. That will happen. He wants to get in the England team.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, he's just, what a ridiculous, terrible idea that was.
You know, it's quite bad now that we've got to a stage where, and I'm saying this as well, and I'm quite a traditional sort of football fan. At the end of the day, we're looking at the likes of Sterling and I'm saying, yeah, you know, you've got to be as disruptive as possible now to get out of your club if you want to go. If you're a youngster and you want to move on, John Stones played it respectively, played the game, didn't end up getting a move. De Gea was respectable, didn't get a move. Sterling,
but what
out the pram, he was off.
What I do like about this is that Berahino has kicked up a massive fuss. He was told he could leave by his manager, you know, Pulis wanted him to go, but he has kicked up a massive fuss and he's still at the club. So that, for me, shows that toys out the pram doesn't always work.
Well, that's it. I mean, there's been some news and some speculation going around of actually what the transfer was. And as how I understand it from our sources is that Tottenham only wanted to put a £6 million lump sum up and it was all in player enhancements and add-ons and all the rest of it. And now, for West Brom, obviously, that's a bad business deal. So they're not going to accept something like that close to the end of the window.
Yeah, and I don't. If you want to leave the club, don't sign a long-term contract. Players think that, you know, you can sign a 2-year deal or a 10-year deal. You can leave that club whenever you want. Well, I'm afraid we've always said that contracts these days aren't worth the paper that they're written on.
Yeah.
Well, this proves that there is still some weight there. And the same with Everton. I have massive respect for both West Brom and Everton because they've said they're not for sale. And they've stuck by that.
Yeah.
You know, De Gea, they said he wasn't for sale, he would have gone. Sterling, not for sale, did go.
Yeah.
They have stuck by their word, and I've got a lot of admiration for them.
That's fair enough. I mean, I have to admit, I've been the fan of the way that Sterling went, because at the end of the day, he needed to force himself out, and he got there in the end. But I don't know. I think we're going to start seeing a bit of a change to the way that we actually see some of these moves go about. Now, we're going to be moving on to some of our Yorkshire clubs very, very shortly. But firstly, I just want to get your opinion on the transfer deadline day anyway, because for me, this has jumped the shark now, hasn't it?
It's transcended football.
Yeah.
People are more interested in transfer deadline day than watching football. Mm. You know, it's just... It's like I said last week, some very loud Scottish man who's shouting that Joleon Lescott's moved to Aston Villa one cares. No. People don't care about that, I'm afraid. Mm. You know, De Gea stuff, fair enough, that's interesting.
Yeah.
People don't care about John Walters handing a transfer request in at Stoke. People don't care about Glenn Murray moving to Bournemouth. But they make it out like it's huge news. Yeah. It's just not.
I just think that the one thing that always gets me is, I actually did enjoy watching it for a while. And
yeah.
I think it's because it was new and it was something different. Yes. But you know when the exact point, it was the January deadline day when they moved all of the reporters in. I know they had very good reason to do it.
Mm.
They moved all of the reporters inside into the training grounds and stuff. It just lost so much atmosphere. There was just nothing. It was just people at a place behind a tree in front of some fencing going, this is what's happening at the moment. And I thought, well, how do you know? You're 400 yards from where the actual people making this decision are. And it just seemed to... It's jumped the shark, but we'll have to see how that one goes. And you've already got more about it. Yeah, so we've got more to come. And we're also moaning about a transfer show on a transfer show. We're talking more about Yorkshire transfers just after this.
Transfer Tittle Tattle on Radio Yorkshire.
Welcome back to Transfer Tittle Tattle here on Radio Yorkshire. Me, Danny Parkinson, and Liam Williams from The Mirror Online. And we're talking about some of the latest transfer speculation and some of the biggest stories that have come up. But let's look at some of our Yorkshire clubs and what they've been up to during this transfer window. Whether or not how much they've done it so far. Leeds United, they had a last day signing in Jordan Bataka, the winger who signs from Excelsior after signing from the Belgian club Bruges in 2013. 22 years old, another winger at the club. Liam, we've talked in the past about the winger problem at Leeds United where they brought in Stuart Dallas and... you know, they have Byram on the wing as well. It's going to be interesting to see how Leeds do now, because overall in their transfer window, they've had the likes of Chris Wood coming in, Stuart Dallas, Bataka coming in for £1 million as well, and Ross Turnbull. They've had actually some good signings. They have strengthened over that period.
Yeah, and I think going into the season, we spoke recently about a two-tier sort of division, the Championship, and I think that if you're in that top tier, you strengthen your squad. You're not a selling club. And I think Leeds have sort of established themselves as that.
Mm.
Chris Wood, I thought, were an important signing. Keeping hold of Sam Byram was almost like a signing in itself.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's a good statement that the club have made, to be honest, as much as anything else.
I mean, Leeds United are known for their disastrous deadline day antics with when Massimo Cellino came in and Brian McDermott was sacked and reinstated or wasn't sacked. And then you had the selling of Ross McCormack on deadline day not so long ago and all that sort of thing. To actually look back at this one, for me, for Leeds, you had four key youngsters. People thought they were going to get sold. Massimo's kept his word. He said, no, I'm not going to sell them. And he's kept them. And that for me, just shows that Leeds United could have this progression, because some of them, they're going into the second season now as youngsters.
Yeah, and it goes back to talking about ambition, like we have done. How do you want to be fighting off relegation? Do you want to be a selling club just to keep the funds coming in?
Mm.
Do you want to invest into the club and have an actual go at promotion? You know, getting into the Premier League these days is bigger than it's ever been.
Yeah.
And for that, you do have to put the money in. You see the clubs like Derby, for example, who will probably come to later on, you know, that they spend the money.
Yeah.
You know, and you need to do that. There's no cheap way to the top at the moment.
Mm. No, you're right there. And let's have a look at Huddersfield. It's not been a fantastic transfer window for them in terms of the players that have gone, the signings that might, have come in. It's been quite low on that front. I imagine Chris Powell will be looking to dip into the loan market and so on, because when I spoke to him at the last press conference, he did actually say yes and no on the transfer window closing. I asked him this, player said, do you want it to go? Are you looking forward to it closing? He said, yes and no, I want to bring some people in. Huddersfield have brought one player in on loan, but they have lost Jacob Butterfield, rumoured to be around £4 or £5 million to Derby County, losing Connor Cody, losing Alex Smithies. They're three players in your starting 11, that's always going to have an effect, especially when you haven't had a win so far this season.
Yeah, it is, but, you know, Huddersfield aren't the team who spends £10 million on deadline day.
No.
Derby are, and the bigger clubs will just pick the assets off. Ultimately, if the owner still thinks that they are strong enough to survive, then at the moment, Huddersfield might as well sell whoever they need to sell to make sure that they're financially secure. They're not a big club with a massive revenue, you know. It's relatively limited in what they can bring in. So if they can sell a midfielder for £5 million, you know, it doesn't cost you a £5 million midfielder to stay in the division.
No,
you know,
no.
If you can get loan signings in to make up for that shortfall, ultimately Huddersfield won't be any more or less likely to go up. You know, because they weren't going up anyway. It's just as long as they stay in the division. Yeah.
But for 4 years now they've been in the Championship. I know he's gone quickly, but 4 years they've been in the Championship, and every season it has been that until we get some investment, we're just going to be keeping our heads above water again. Mm. And that's that lack of optimism in the fans. I could see that even before the likes of Jacob Butterfield had actually gone after the Notts County game when they lost in the League Cup.
Yeah, and to be honest, I can't say it's anything I've ever really experienced, but as long as... Sometimes, you know, being in a relegation battle can almost be more enjoyable than just being a mid-table club when you're not going up, you're not going down, because at least you've got something to sort of keep you going. You know, you've got must-win games.
Yeah, you expect to build on that after a certain amount of time.
You do, and like I say, the fans know that they need the money. The club knows that they need the money to invest, and unless they could do something similar to what Burnley did a few years ago, and you just have this unexpected run to the top, the chances are it is going to be another season of consolidation, and if they can get themselves anywhere near mid-table, they would say they've had a good season. It won't be the most exciting season that they've ever had, but it will be good enough. They'll still be in the Championship, and you've still got that platform to potentially build on.
No, you're right there, and let's hear from Huddersfield Examiner journalist Doug Thompson, who spoke to Thomas Feeney yesterday about that Jacob Butterfield signing.
Saying that, you know, they didn't want to sell him, it wasn't going to happen, but the more and more it went on, you know, the clearer it became that the chances were that it was going to happen, really. And I think about the weekend, they pretty much admitted that, you know, it was on the card. So no major surprise, but still very disappointing, and particularly to the supporters.
Obviously, last season, the player of the year, someone who really made a fantastic impact at the club.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there were some doubts about it when he first came here. You know, he came in to replace Adam Clayton, and his departure was considered to be a major setback. But, you know, proved to be a really good signing. Obviously, you know, Town paid about £500,000 for him. And, you know, potentially have increased that fee 10 times. So, you know, it's a good bit of business. You can see why, you know, it was a very hard offer to turn down. But, you know, it leaves a big hole. Obviously, you know, probably the most creative player that the club have got. You know, certainly a fans' favourite. And, you know, a big loss, and it will take some replacing.
And it's one of them deals that really has been protracted over the last couple of weeks. The first bid was around £3 million, and it's just been slightly going up ever since, getting to a point where, would you say the fee is in the region of £5 million?
Yeah, I understand it's somewhere in that region. I mean, transfer fees are quite complicated things these days. You know, they have a lot of add-ons, you know, a lot of clauses. It's very difficult to sort of put a figure on it in the way that you would have done 20, 30 years ago. But yeah, I'd say, you know, £5 million is a fair estimate of what it could reach. So, you know, that's a lot of money to a club like Huddersfield Town. And, you know, they've made no secret of the financial constraints that they're working under. And they've made no secret of the policy of bringing people in and trying to sell them on for much bigger fees, which they have done in quite a few cases. It's obviously a case of keeping bringing in players that can replace the ones that you've lost without losing the quality, and that's a pretty hard thing.
Doug Thompson there, Huddersfield Examiner journalist, talking to Tom Feeney yesterday after that Jacob Butterfield departure. I'll move on to a couple of other things very shortly. But one thing, Bradford City, they didn't actually bring anyone in on deadline day. The last person they brought in was actually Devante Cole. What did he do?
Yep.
He scored the goal, Devante Cole.
He
scored in the 94th minute. Got them their first win against Port Vale. It's no better way than starting and getting yourself a goal on your debut, is especially in the 94th minute, because Bradford aren't known for late goals.
No, if anything, it's the other way around, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Getting the first win of the season, especially in the manner that they've done it, you know, right at the death, can be a nice turning point for them. And especially for a new signing, a striker, you know, even more so, to get off the mark so quickly and in that kind of fashion as well.
quite unbelievable, really. Isn't it?
You'd hope for the Bradford fans that it's, you know, like father, like son, and that he can kick on from here.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And after watching a few Bradford games, their performances have kept improving one-on-one, especially after that Gillingham defeat. Now, let's move on to just one subject that about a month ago we picked up on, and it has become the figure of the show for me.
Yeah.
It's Charlie Austin.
Yeah.
We talked about him having no knee ligaments. We talked about him transfer. We talked about how good value he is, how bad value he is for certain trades. He's not moved, Liam. He's going to be playing Championship football. I can't quite believe that. The second biggest goal scorer last season is English. And he's not moved anyway. He's still going to be playing in the Championships. Unbelievable.
I know, and I'll hold my hands up. I thought he'd go.
Yeah, I did the same.
I can't believe that he hasn't gone, because, don't get me wrong, £15 million was a lot of money. And credit to QPR for standing by that. Mm-hmm. They didn't, you know, get scared as deadline day came and said, right, we'll flog him for whatever.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't push it a little bit more. He sort of maintained that he was happy to stay.
Mm.
But a lot of players do that, you know, and then the move. Yeah. You've got Euro 2016 coming up. He could have been in the squad if he would have been a Premier League player with Newcastle, West Ham, Crystal Palace, whoever. I don't think he can make the England squad from the Championship.
Mm.
I think that's a really, really strange move when you've had this meteoric rise to the top.
Yeah.
You have this brilliant debut season in the Premier League. You make the England squad and then you go to the Championship and you stay there. It's like, it's really strange.
You've got the making of Andy Johnson from Crystal Palace,
but even he came back up, you know. And Charlie Austin will play in the Premier League again. I'm just surprised that he didn't do it sooner.
Mm. Anything else surprise of this transfer window, Liam?
To be honest, just the fact that Everton eventually kept John Stones. I think they were probably the story. I think that's the best business that's been done by a club. They maintained from the start, we don't want to sell him. They rejected every bid. John Stones had to put a transfer request in to try and force it. They said, no, not selling him. And yeah, full credit to Everton.
You know what this spells? It's the last transfer tittle-tattle,
because
there's no transfer window.
I know.
Doesn't make any sense, does
not
it?
Not at all, no.
So we will be departing. There will be no more transfer tittle-tattle.
Gutted.
But don't worry, because next week we'll be carrying on with some more press talk. We'll be talking about the latest news and deals and we'll also be talking about the weekend's football, which we didn't do tonight because we just simply ran out of time. Now, before David Bolton shouts at me and tells me to get out of the studio, I'd better be off. Liam, thank you very much for joining me across the transfer window, and please come back next week.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Dan. I'll be here.
Join us again next week, 9 till 10 here on Radio Yorkshire. David Bolton up next.
Transfer tittle tattle on Radio Yorkshire.